This is the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, helping millennials execute their vision.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blind Entrepreneur. I am your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today we are on episode 48. Jared Kleiner, 20 years of age, author of the award-winning book, 2 Billion Under 20, and his new book, which we'll be discussing today, is 3 Billion Under 30. Jared also builds businesses from his business consulting firm called Kleiner Ventures. Jared, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well. Just got to bang out a nice early interview to start the day.
Absolutely. The only way to start your day is to hang out with me at around 8 o'clock in the morning talking business.
Has your audience gotten your last name down at this point?
Well, I use the parameter of like not just the audience, but just people in general, and nobody really gets my last name.
Really?
So I'm just going to assume that if nobody in the world can understand it, then they can't understand it either. So I usually tell people that if you want to spell my last name, you sneeze, and whatever comes out, that's what it is. So,
can you say your own last name five times fast?
Well, I guess we'll try right now. Grzbowski, 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 Grzbowski.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Nice.
So we're going to start the interview off with an icebreaker because we always like to have fun on the podcast.
Sure, so I appreciate that.
Imagine that you just had the worst day of your life. You're down in the dumps. Your head is in the sand. You're trying to figure out how to make your day better. What is that one piece of food that's going to lift your spirits higher and make the day better?
It has to be like dollar slices in New York, or like just some sort of New York City 2 or 3 a.m. pizza. Like, you cannot beat that. I actually had some last night. It was great. You cannot beat pizza in New York.
So what are we having on the pizza? Is it just like a plain cheese pizza, or are you having some special stuff on it?
You know, at 2 a.m., you don't get to choose. It's whatever the chef has put out for you in the slice department. So if there's chicken on the pizza, or if there's some sort of like hamburger pizza, then you're in luck. But if not, then you always got the trusty plain cheese pizza to fall back on.
There you go. And I'm not even going to ask you why you're out and about at being 20 years of age at 2 a.m.
Networking events.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
I was at one last night. I was speaking. There's a group called SheWorks in New York, which is a predominantly female entrepreneurial group, but I was helping them all fix their pitches to press, actually. Okay. So that was the whole theme of the event, and I led one of the breakout sessions. All the entrepreneurs are amazing. We didn't get out until pretty late.
So you're 20 years of age. We want to know, who are you? What is your story? Tell us about yourself.
What do you want to hear first?
Let's start from conception. You were born? No, just kidding.
So I started in the entrepreneurial space at 15. Came from a pretty entrepreneurial family, yet wasn't entitled to any of their entrepreneurial success. And I say that because it was the grandparents and it was the uncles who were financially doing well. And my parents themselves were more middle class. So saw what success looked like, wasn't entitled to any of it, which actually put me in a really great place to want to strive to be financially successful while at the same time looking at my life and figuring out how can I be successful in other realms, like personal relationships, like living a lifestyle that I designed rather than being succumbed to the stresses of normal life, as an uncle would, things like that. So started down this road, built my first business at 15. It failed miserably. I also failed again at 16. But during that time, at 16, I worked for two VC-backed startups in Silicon Valley. That brought me through till 18. A lot of these timelines like interlap, but you know, I found myself at 17, in the middle of my second business attempt in the Thiel Foundation's summit, and got this idea for what eventually became my first book, 2 Billion Under 20. We had a speaker who prompted us that there was 2 billion people in the world 20 years old or younger, yet there were only 200 people in the room that day. And we were challenged on the spot to get as many young people as possible to act on their passions in life and unite in solving really big pressing problems for society, because as you see in the world, our problems are increasingly exponential, and it's going to take an increasingly exponential collaboration effort to solve these problems. So I found myself at 17 coming off, I guess, my second VC-backed startup job, my second failed company, and finally, you know, had the seed for what became the first success, which was $2 billion under 20.
So let's talk about the first book. There are sure. tons of people out there that want to create a book. They either they want to write a book. They don't know how to do it. They don't know where to begin. Let's talk about the process a little bit and how you obviously we talked about how you conceived the idea, but how did you just get it started and off the ground?
Yeah, and with the world of publishing and the world of books, as with any company you would make, I would always ask why you're doing it and figure that out first. So for us, the book was just step one of something a lot bigger. And the book was my excuse, alongside my co-author at the time, to identify and connect world-class millennials. So the book actually didn't matter the first time around. And we realized that it didn't matter from a strictly money-making sense in a standalone, thing. So what we did was we went and got a publisher in order to give the rest of our contributors the social proof that they'd be featured in a traditionally published book. And our model is bringing together 75 stories from world-class millennials, ranging from Olympians to teenage entrepreneurs, singers, actors, scientists, nonprofit founders, kind of like Chicken Soup for the Soul style meets a millennial version of Think and Grow Rich. So that put us in a place where it wasn't just a book for me and my co-author, it was a book for 75 other people who had poured a lot of their time and energy into what we were doing. And so at the time, it was really important for us to get that stamp of approval from a traditional publisher, even if it meant that we wouldn't make money directly from the book other than a very small advance. And in terms of going to get a publisher, that's a whole other conversation. We could have an entire talk about the publishing world and how to maneuver it. But that was the strategy going into $2 billion under 20. The book finally came out last year. It did really well, picked up a lot of press. We didn't make a lot of money directly from it, but from Kleiner Ventures and the indirect attention that's came to my consulting firms, to my speaking, I've been able to profit from that. And then with $3 billion under 30, my next book, which is the same model except for sharing stories of 21 to 30-year-olds to target the 3 billion people in the world, 30 and under, it's a little different in terms of my approach with it. So I'm actually approaching it as a money-making entity in its own right, much like you would with a software product. So I'm trying to figure out, how do I productize this book so that it can make money by itself and then also continue accomplishing the same goal we set out with for $2 billion under 20, which is identifying and connecting world-class millennials so that we can bring together their voice, influence, expertise, and collaboratively impact as many people as possible. So the way I've structured the next book is I am professionally self-publishing, which is a model that Tucker Max and James Altucher have kind of refined over time. So there is precedent for it, although it's relatively unique. And I'm essentially doing everything a publisher would do, finding top-notch designers, finding the best editors, actually working with the companies that own the physical printing machines so that they can print the books. And then my goal is to sell a lot more copies than I did the first time around. But I also get all the freedom of having the financial incentives in my favor rather than giving up the financial control to a publisher this time. So this time it's much more about, making money from the actual book release itself, which also is, from a capitalistic standpoint, puts the financial rewards in my favor, which actually allows me to better amplify the stories that I've received in the book, because I'll be incentivized from the day it launches till years later to continue selling that book and making sure that all these people's stories are being seen and being read and digested and acted upon. So I think all around it's a much better model to work off of. I wouldn't go back and change anything from 2 billion under 20. Like there was a clear reason we decided to publish with a publisher, but I don't think it's necessary to do that anymore. And you know, it really depends on your goals for writing a book. Are you writing a book for vanity? Are you writing a book because you want to indirectly grow a consulting business or a speaking business? Are you writing a book because you want to make money from that book and have it become the basis of a business? You know, those are all good reasons, as long as you're aware of your reasoning.
Sure.
I don't think the vanity one is a great one, but there is a personal branding aspect to it. And then the selfish byproduct of these books has been I've met, you know, and become friends with world-class millennials, everyone from the pro athletes that I see on TV and kind of geek out, or at least they're, you know, their people, to hip-hop influencers, to entrepreneurs that I really respect and admire. And yeah, it's become very fun.
Yeah, so let's talk about the types of people that you interviewed and maybe some techniques that you've used in order to get in front of these people. You know, can you speak to that?
Sure. So I don't actually interview them like you are with me. I set the stage for them to share what they find is most important. It's cool because they end up making the content for me and for the book, and then my role becomes curator of everyone's stories and editor. But if I've done the hard job of identifying who should be in this book and keeping the diversity intact and keeping the collective voice intact, then I just get out of the way and I let them talk. And I actually ask them to write stories based on one of two prompts. So I asked them to share a formative life experience mixed with practical takeaways for the reader so that they can use it to grow their business or grow their personal brand or become a better athlete or whatever they're reading the book for. Or I'll ask them what they find most important to share with our millennial peers from a practical standpoint. And so those answers have yielded very surprising answers from the people I've asked. You know, you have, like in our last book, we had a 17-year-old who developed a nuclear fusion reactor in his garage for $5,000, which is unthinkable if you think about the Manhattan Project of the 1930s and how it took the work of three governments, 7 years, 130,000 people, and $26 billion by today's standards to create the first atomic bomb. So like the fact that Conrad was able to do it two generations later at $5,000 in his garage, it's insane. And so in our first book, rather than talk directly about that, he found it more important to share his worldview on learning because no one teaches you that in school. And so he literally broke down step by step how he was able to acquire the knowledge and find his own community with which to learn in to ultimately develop these skill sets to pull off that feat. And so those are the type of stories that we look for. In terms of the people that we go for, you know, these are like highest integrity people. I look for people who are connectors within their own industry. You know, so if we have a Snapchat influencer A over here, and then we have Snapchat influencer B over here, and Snapchat influencer B has a community of other Snapchat influencers around them, that's the person I'm probably going to share the story of, assuming they are of a high quality person and high integrity, and if they have a really unique backstory, even better. But I know that if I can amplify their story, that everyone else around them is going to see it. And that's really been the goal, is how can we bring together unique voices that influence their own industries and influence their own sect of millennials and take their interest, take their readership, and have them look at 74 other options, you know, in the process, because that collaborative way of thinking about solving problems is the only way we're going to solve any of the major problems we're facing as a society today. In my opinion.
No, that's a great, it's a fantastic point. And you know, one thing in particular that I'd like to know is you mentioned that you wouldn't change anything that you would have done when it comes to publishing a book, you know, with a publisher versus what you're currently doing now with 3 billion under 30. What has been the biggest failure thus far in this book writing process or maybe even your entrepreneurial career?
Biggest failure. So when I was 15 and into 16 a little bit, my first business mentor, I found out a few months into hanging out with him that he'd served time in prison for a securities fraud on Wall Street. And he was my mom's then boyfriend, of course. So that steered me, you know, into a place where I was looking to not associate with people of any shady background whatsoever and really focused hard on associating with people of the highest integrity, people who really knew their stuff and were subject matter experts in what they claimed to be. And that shift has really shaped my career in the last 5 years, because I've surrounded myself with mentors who are insanely good at what they do and who are also just the best people on the planet and wouldn't do wrong by me in any way, shape, or form, and have helped me in so many ways just to become the person I am and to meet other, you know, people that could help me. And I expect the same out of, you know, anyone I'm connecting with. It's really go for real, authentic relationships, you know, hold people to high standards of integrity and work with them on that basis and run from negativity and run from anyone who seems shady or who isn't putting their best foot forward, even if they might be good. You know, you want to go for exceptional. So that was I wouldn't call it a failure of judgment. It was just a coincidence that happened in my life that I'm glad happened. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely things like I would have made different decisions with Tubulate Under 20 in terms of how we published it. But when I say I wouldn't change it, like all those decisions that we didn't do to the best of our knowledge guide the ability to publish 3 billion under 30 the way I want this time.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems, I mean, being, no, don't take this personally, but at a relatively young age, I mean, you're 20 years of years old, you're kicking some serious ass in the space. I'm sure a lot of people come up to you and say, you know, hey man, you're 20 years old. You know, what do you know about the world? So my question is, what would you say to those people? We see a lot of individuals at a young age. You talked about the gentleman who developed a nuclear reactor. But if somebody came up to you and said, you're 20 years of age, what do you know about the world? How are you able to talk about millennials at being just at a young age of 20? You maybe haven't even experienced anything yet. What would you say to those people?
Yeah, so I unfortunately don't get that a lot. But
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, the world is changing at an increasingly exponential speed. And so you see a lot of our institutions not keeping up in terms of tooling millennials, Gen Zers with the knowledge that they need to actually exist and thrive in this world. So listening to inadequate or outdated advice is probably not going to get you too far. I mean, I love my parents, I love my grandparents, but in certain categories, they definitely have knowledge, and that's what I would seek their advice and counsel for. But in other places, the world is changing so fast that they don't necessarily know what the right answer is, and they might have a very wrong answer by continuing to stick to their old ways of thinking and stick to their old mental models. So I think the game today is less about acquiring some sort of set of knowledge, but, you know, instead trying to acquire a way of learning or a way of acquiring knowledge so that you can adapt over time, because things are only going to get more frequent in terms of the speed in which it changes. You know, you want to get to a place where you are surrounded with people who are constantly thinking 24/7 about all these different types of things, and then put yourself in an ability or in a spot to learn from all of them over time. So that's why I'm able to keep up with the times and develop my own unique ways of thinking, is because I've surrounded myself with hundreds of subject matter experts in their various fields. So that is going to naturally accelerate my learning and also keep me up to date with what's going on in the cryptocurrency world, what's going on in the sports world, what's going on in the music industry, and all that. And it's less even about the specific details, and it's just about the trends in which how things are changing. So it's, yeah, I don't listen to people who are like, what do you know about this? You know, it's kind of, no one knows anything. So it's, you know, what ways do we know of learning are probably a more important question.
Mm. So we have a great foundation of who you are as a business person, but now I'd like to learn a little bit more about who you are up in here. And I'm pointing to my head to people who are listening. You know, what have been some of the habits that have helped you become more efficient throughout your day?
Yeah, the biggest one is focusing most of my time developing relationships with people I call super connectors, or the people that disproportionately have influence and clout with their networks or with a specific industry. You know, so I save a lot of time by not going to a conference and pushing business cards with everyone, but instead focusing on building a relationship with the conference organizer or with the main two speakers. And that time and time again, in any industry you'd want to play in, or really anywhere, you know, if you identify the 100 to 200 or 500 super connectors that you can constantly provide value to and build a real meaningful, authentic relationship with, like call them on their birthday, know details about their life, like just be an actual human and friend, that just saves a lot of time in terms of building your network, because now you get access to their entire networks as long as you have a reason for asking for access. And you know, that really also puts you in a great position of influence, you know, because right now I can be, you know, I can look and I'm like, okay, well, I influence 100 or 200 or 500 millennials that then influence tens of millions of people. I don't have to meet those tens of millions of people, nor do I have to build an active social media series of accounts to manage tens of millions of followers, which of course I'd love to do in the future, but baby steps. But you know, I save a lot of time by looking to influence 100 people that can influence 10 million, and really building those relationships with super connectors first, rather than as many people as possible.
Very good strategy. And are there resources? You know, it's very difficult to write a book. It's very difficult to just be in business in general. But what are some of the resources that you use every day that you just can't live without, whether that's special types of technology, special processes, procedures, et cetera?
I keep it simple. I mean, Google Docs is great. And, you know, I would rather go for maybe systems that I use. So I keep a master spreadsheet for 3 billion under 30 with a list of all my contributors and a list of just different activities that I need to get done in order to create that product. And it almost takes the form of a Gantt chart in a sense. So that system that I've set up for myself of making that master spreadsheet, which I can actually, if I make books in the future, like outsource to other people so they can replicate this book creation process. That's something I always have open on my tabs. Similarly, I have I probably have like two or three Google Docs like that. I have one, a contributor's guide for my contributors, which I took, you know, the hour or 2 hours to make it. And then that's something I've just sent the link to all the contributors over time, and it's become my main sales piece. I actually need to spend more time making all those systems, but every time I do that, I have really good results. You know, and same with even like sales material for my consulting firm. You know, I have a case study of a recent client where we quadrupled their sales in a month and helped them become like the number one Indiegogo campaign of all time in the food category. So that like step-by-step case study is huge. And it's like all I have to do is send that to a potential client after maybe a quick call. And they have interest, and that saves me a lot of time in terms of retelling the story. Same with like an overall case studies and capabilities document that I created. So anytime I can make those type of systems or those central docs that you do a really good job making it once and then you keep sharing it, I think that's always a good way to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I guess one of my last main questions here is, The Blind Entrepreneur was created to help individuals that are either lost, they don't know how to start a business, they want to start a business, they don't know where to go, they started a business and they just don't know exactly where to take it. I'm sure very similarly to how you started your books as well. Mm-hmm. What are three pieces of advice that you'd give to another millennial who, again, fits that mold?
Go find amazing people to surround yourself with. So I would look at what peers can you surround yourself with who are exceptional and who will make you step up your game. I'd look at what mentors can you surround yourself with to help you step up your game and give you opportunities. And those can be physical mentors or they could be virtual mentors like a podcast host or an author. People that you can get 99% of their material but can't necessarily access as easily. That's number one. And then, you know, two, I would really think hard about how you're spending your time and try and cut away the noise and really focus on the things that move the needle. You know, so if it's, you know, if you're making $3 billion under 30, like you should be putting your time in identifying who you want in the book and like reaching out to them and selling them on the fact that they should be a contributor, not necessarily building a marketing plan that you're not going to use for 4 months, or growing social media accounts even, which are necessary, but having your product first is more necessary, or doing sales calls to push Kleiner Ventures forward, more necessary than building Kleiner Ventures social media accounts. Unless you're using social media to sell, then that's a different story. But you know, focus would be the second in one word. Three pieces of advice. You need a third. Don't lose your cell phone because this thing is becoming increasingly valuable.
That's good.
I think a lot of people would rather get stabbed than lose their cell phone.
Listen, if I can't play Pokemon Go for, you know, 2 hours, I'm starting to get a little itchy. So
yeah, and that's piece of advice number four: is stop playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah. And why? What's your point? I want to hear.
It's just a waste of time.
Well, how so? I mean, People could say that I've actually explored more of the city on my days off than I have in the past, I'd say, month. So like,
if you're using it recreationally on your days off, I guess that's fine. You know, like everyone has their own way of spending their entertainment time. But if you're obsessing over Pokemon Go rather than a business. Mm. If it's coming at sacrifice of something else, then you should really review that.
Couldn't agree more. So, Jared, if people wanted to learn more about you, they want to partake in your journey, they want to buy your books, how can people do that?
Sure. So 3billionunder30.com is probably a good place to go find the book. And we're pre-selling it for 6 months, even though it's not going to come out until January, but anyone who pre-orders the book is going to get all these different bonuses and save money. So that's always a good way to go. That'd be three, the word billion, the word under, the number 30.com. For everything else, go to jaredkleinert.com, jaredkleinert.com. And then if you Google my name, you'll find everything else.
Very good. And I actually do have one last question here. You know, you
hit me.
Just said that, you know, it's going to be a 6 month pre-sale,
mm-hmm.
or pre-order. Why? What is the strategy behind that 6 month pre-sale, that 6 month pre-order?
It's a lot of strategy behind it. One of which is the ability to finance the first print run now that I'm the publisher. So if I can sell a couple thousand copies, then I could pay for the first 10,000 copies. And the sales from the first 10,000 copies will finance the rest of the journey. My goal is to sell 100,000 books. So it's a marathon, but you know, getting revenue in from the first 10,000 book sales will be able to finance buying the physical 90,000 other copies. So that's one. Two is customer development, which I advise every single one of my clients to do really heavily at the beginning of our work together. And so being able to not even very publicly pre-sell my book, but very privately, like one by one, emailing friends and family, seeing why they buy the book, seeing why something like this would be valuable to them, and then talking to all of them. Doing that months ahead of time is going to put me in a great position to then have better press and sell this book in a much better way. So there's a lot of customer development. Three is building more of a community around the book launch. Four would be the ability to show traction to press and to potential buyers and influencers. Because in January, when I'm pitching press, I'd be like, hey, we've already sold 4,000 copies or 5,000 copies, and the book hasn't even come out yet. They're not going to ask that I've been pre-selling it for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And if they do, who cares? It's still...
still 6,000.
Yeah, it's still 70 grand in sales or 100 grand in sales before it's come out. So, and these are all things I can do because I don't have a publisher. So really, you know, that's why I say really think hard about what your goals are with the projects you're doing. And if the goals that you have don't align with your activities, like change your activities and change the way you're structuring your product launches and your business to match your actual goals. So those are four reasons out of many that I'm pre-selling the book for 6 months.
Well, it's a great idea, and congratulations on all of your success thus far.
Thank you.
Again, it is 3billionunder30.com, and then it's 3billion30.
It's 3billionunder30, so that breaks down to the number 3, the word billion, the word under, the number 30.com.
Perfect.
Or if you wanted to spell it out, it won't be on Amazon, so you got to go to that URL.
Awesome. All right, Jared, well, thank you again so much for your time. Couldn't be more appreciative, and have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.